Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, December 29th, 2019. You can listen and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and on Podbean, the host site. This week, my guest is the late, great comedian and actor Angelo Lozada, who passed away earlier this month. I initially posted this episode on my Patreon feed as a treat for them, my subscribers, and when I found out that he passed away, I thought I'd share this with everybody that listens to the show, and mainly for the comics. I know sometimes this show can be, most podcasts with comedians can be inside baseball, and you talk about stuff, and you know, I think people like to hear it, but this one was I'll get to that. But Angelo was one of those dudes that, you know, like if you have to go out, and when you go out, you want to be remembered and revered like Angelo. I'm not gonna lie to you and say that I was BFFs with him, and I know a lot of people were. I was not, but every time I saw Angelo, he was one of those dudes that made you feel like you were the most important person in the room. And clearly I wasn't, but he made you feel that way. Something about a person, about his aura, about his vibe that just made you feel welcomed. And a lot of times in the comedy community and show business, there's a lot of insecurities and there's a lot of forces to make you feel like you're not. But not with Angelo, like I always felt welcomed and I always felt like I was a part of the community when I was around him or when he was around. And he was just one of those dudes when you go to work, it's like, oh, this guy's here. Like if you're working retail, you know, like if you've ever worked retail and there was that guy or that girl that was working there, and when you were on the schedule with that person, like, fuck yeah, this is gonna be better. The day is gonna be better. The shift is gonna be better because this person is here. And that's how I felt about Angelo. And there are a couple moments that I had in my comedy career, my fledgling career, especially when I was starting out, that Angelo was a part of, and he made me feel like shit was going to get better or I was going to be okay. And we talk about one of them. And so that's there. That's in this conversation. There's a GoFundMe up, so I'll post that in the show notes. Just trying to make sure I say the things that I want to say in this, because I've recorded this intro like 100 times. He was just a really good dude. And it sucks. Like this month has been really rough on a lot of people. I can just look at not only Angelo's death, but just people. I guess the holiday season, it can get really rough when you think about the people that you lost and people that aren't here anymore, people that have just like recently died, and it's just not. Social media feed is just flooded with people that a lot of people love that aren't here anymore, you know, and it's tough. And I just remember, like, I was fortunate to get to work with Angelo last September, and I was opening for Paul Verzi at Gotham, which was a big night for me, and was to really Angelo was just like another night doing stand up. Cause he'd been doing it for so long. And my first weekend, doing my first full weekend working at that club, he was a part of it, and I'll never forget that. You know, it was just a great weekend. He hosted the Friday night shows. And that weekend, I decided, I was like, yo, we got to get this on. We got to do a podcast. Because every time I saw him, we shooting the shit, talking about sports or something. It was, yo, you got to do my podcast. You got to do. He's like, yeah, man. He says, just reach out. And I was just like in my own shit or didn't like reach out to him. And after that night we worked together, I was like, we got to make this shit happen. We're going to make this happen. So we made it happen before he had a show. And so I met him at Gotham before a show that he had in the Vintage Lounge. And we just shot the shit. This is a conversation two comics shooting the shit, making each other laugh. Him making me laugh a lot more than I made him laugh, obviously. And he was with his son. His son was around sitting at the table. We were just in the main room in the back corner, just like hanging out. So there are a couple people that kind of interrupt, but it's not a big deal. It's just like comics hanging out. And I'm glad that we laid it down. I'm glad we did it on, got this on MP3, and I get to share that with you, like Angelo, how I remember him, how a lot of you remember him. And here's my conversation with the late, great Angelo Lozada.
1-1-1.
I don't know how we're.
You're expecting this to be an hour?
I usually like to do an hour, but yeah. I mean, if it's truncated, it's truncated. Okay. But I just wanted to have you on.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
An hour seems a bit much for me right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
But we're going to rock out.
We're going to rock out. We're
rock out as long as we can.
Yeah.
Put our cocks out.
That's right. It's funny, like one of the guys that helped give me a career was holding up the podcast, so we couldn't start.
Yeah. Steve, you mind?
Yeah. Like, dude, come on. That's funny. I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago when I met you. Was that like this really kind of, it was kind of a hell gig.
I kind of remember it.
It was at an Italian restaurant.
Yeah.
And it was like in like Rutherford, New Jersey.
I don't remember where it was, but you mentioned Shatara Curry.
Yes.
She booked it.
Yeah.
Right. And she was hosting.
I think she was hosting, yeah.
And it was like, I'm trying to describe how I see it, but I'm not going to be able to do a good job with it.
I think it was called Aldila Italian Bistro.
I don't remember that, but I vaguely remember that.
And they didn't want, I don't know if they wanted us there or the clientele there, because it was kind of a black show.
Oh, and they weren't feeling that?
And they weren't really feeling it.
Yeah.
I think one of the waiters left
because
they were afraid that nobody was going to tip them.
The waiter left?
Yeah, like, I think
that's
she got
hilarious.
Mad or she got weirded out or something.
Forget about all these mollies. They don't tip.
Exactly.
They don't tip. You think I'm going to stay here, wear black for this?
Exactly.
I'm out of here.
But fuck out. Yeah, so yeah. So I didn't do well. I don't think I bombed, but
right.
I think it was just like, it was just not good.
You know what's interesting about that, right? It's like, you know, we know when we don't do well.
Yeah.
And it's not, you don't have to bomb to feel
right.
Shitty
That's true.
About your set.
That's true.
You know what I mean? You can. There's times when you do well, but you're not
and
happy
you like
about
right.
you know, how it went. You know, and then there's times when you just eating your ass, man. And
yeah.
And then you hit that one new joke,
mm-hmm.
and you're like,
yeah,
not bad. It's a good set.
It's like when I tried to play golf and
yeah.
I hit one down the fairway straight and
yeah.
perfect. And then the rest of the afternoon was trash.
So is that good for you? Like, you good with that one shot? Because
I
don't play golf, but I understand that golf is such a it's a mental situation.
It is.
And you kind of, it's like one shot is not going to do it for you.
Yeah, this
but
was like.
Did this one do it for you?
It was like 97, 98 when Tiger Woods won the Masters.
Right.
And everybody was picking up sticks.
Yeah.
And God bless my parents for putting in that money. But like.
Oh, you were taking lessons and
I
stuff?
Was trying to get. I was on the practice squad of the team.
Oh, so you were nice, yo.
Not really. The coach said, he said, you
were
know.
Black.
No, like, it wasn't even that.
Come on, let's get the black guy on here. It's gonna be novel.
It's the fucking black guy.
Yeah,
I guess he just
in the same way that walked out.
I know. Yeah, it's like
think and I'm gonna stay here for this.
And I grew up in Maryland.
Jeez,
what part of Maryland?
Yeah, Prince George's County. Prince it's like George's. right outside of D.C., not far from Andrews Air Force Base.
Oh, is it a white community, black community?
Predominantly black.
Predominantly black.
Yeah, yeah.
How far from Baltimore?
An hour, okay. An hour or so. Yeah. Like 15, 20 minutes from FedEx Field.
Okay.
Where the Redskins play.
I didn't think you'd want to bring them up.
I didn't want to say it when the
owner.
The owner was here.
Yeah.
I just root for black quarterbacks. So I don't even care.
You think Haskins? It's Haskins, right?
Haskins.
You think he's gonna do something?
If he has some protection, maybe.
Yeah, it's all protection.
Yeah.
The O-line is just the most important thing, man.
Yeah. So if – and one of my friends, shout out to Andy Klein, comedian in D.C.,
uh-huh.
He was saying that D.C. doesn't really know how to treat their stars. That's just some weird – like Chris Webber.
RG3. Was kind of shitted on,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's just – it's weird.
Yeah.
It's like, why would you be angry that the quarterback of an NFL franchise is doing commercials?
Right.
I don't get that.
That's the game. It's everybody weird. Does it. Why wouldn't yours do it?
Yeah. Know? So I don't. It's
although I do have a problem with this, yo.
Okay.
And I don't know what. I'm not sure what the timeline is.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But Kyrie Irving can't stay on the court. Right. He's constantly injured.
And, yeah.
And there was this period of time when he was injured, and then Uncle Drew came out.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, dude, you can't play. 2017,
2018?
Is that when it was? Like
the movie or just
the
like
no, the movie? The movie. Like, the commercials are commercials.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? But, yo, there was a period of time when he wasn't playing, and then a movie comes out. And I don't know. Like, I'd be like, dude, you can't play with us, but you're making movies? Like, that kind of bothered me. But, again, I'm not sure what the timeline is. So, I mean, I could be wrong, but it just – the optics weren't good. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because he had some moves in the movie.
He's he didn't look sick. Hurt. I love watching him play.
He's a monster, man.
I love using him in 2K.
Oh, really?
It's beautiful.
Yeah?
He's a beautiful basketball player. The
he
way
really
that
is
he
fantastic.
Just... It's amazing.
He really is fantastic. And if he knew to... Yeah, ego is everything, man.
Yeah. You
know? And if he just knew... If he just chilled and played with LeBron, they'd be able to do some more things, man.
Right.
But he's a dude who can score 50 on any given night.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I want to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And with LeBron, I guess he felt... He wasn't going to have that freedom.
He's going to have this year to do it, though.
Where is he now?
Brooklyn.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, because KD is going
to
be
he
out.
He just needs to stay on the court. It's like when they were talking about the Knicks getting KD and Kyrie.
Uh-huh.
I was like, KD, he's going to come back. But who knows when he's going to come back, how long it's going to take him to acclimate.
Right.
And Kyrie, just as good as he is, I don't want him, man, because... That dude can't stay on the court.
So you're a Knicks guy.
I'm a Knicks guy.
Yeah.
I'm a Knicks dude. But I root for the Nets as well. You know, I don't hate on the Nets. But I Kyrie just doesn't stay on the court.
That's what I'm concerned about AD too. Like and
Anthony
with the Lakers.
Davis?
Yeah.
No,
he can't stay healthy either.
He's not like Kyrie, but he'll give you 60 to 70.
You think so?
I think so.
I hope so. It would be nice to see.
I mean, he's killing it in preseason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just like
Andrew
to see
here, my man Andrew, the manager here, he said he thinks the Lakers are going to win it all.
That's what everybody's saying.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's an easy pick.
You
don't have to be a genius.
Right.
You know who is a genius?
Who?
Vladimir, the bartender here.
Okay.
Yo, he picked the Raptors.
He did.
Dude, he picked the Raptors. And what did he go game seven? How many games? Six.
They did go six. They went six.
So
they went six.
Right prior, the couple of days before game six, he gave me the score of game six.
What is
that
he?
That dude is crazy. He's
what
a
does
savant.
Does he have a DeLorean or something?
He's a savant, yo.
Okay.
He can't spell his name, but I'll be damned if he don't know sports. Yo, he's crazy with it, yo.
Yeah.
He predicted the Raptors before as we were going into the playoffs. I'm like, man, shut up, man. Give me my drink. Give me my drink, stupid. And stop drinking. Give me my drink and stop drinking. And then they were going to the finals. Like, you got to be kidding.
Yeah.
And then the day before the winning game, like a couple days, he gave me the score. I was like, this dude is just Rain Man.
Yeah.
It's insane. A little scary.
Yeah.
A little scary, yo.
I mean, well, KD was out and then Clay got hurt. So it's like, I mean, What more could you really expect?
And Toronto was, they had a good, it's funny, it's one of those teams like I didn't pay attention to throughout the season.
Because we live in the center of the universe in New York and not much.
Yeah.
And nobody cares about the team up north.
Only assholes feel that way. You know what I mean? We're just as fucking, we're the center of the universe. You know who lives in the center of the universe? Fucking assholes. We just like, we think nobody else matters, nobody else cares.
And
there was a point during the series when they huddled up, the Raptors huddled up, and early on in the playoffs, when they huddled up, and I saw the players that they had in the huddle, I was like,
you're like, who are these
guys? Is a squad, yo.
Yeah.
This is a squad, workmanlike.
Mm-hmm.
Kawhi is an animal. It's a squad, yo.
I liked it. I was pulling for them.
Yeah, me too.
I was,
me too.
You know, I what just pissed me off about last season was just KD coming back. I didn't want him to come back.
Yeah, that was, but he came back on fire. He had like his first three shots.
I was like, oh,
and
shit.
Then he aggravated it. I was like, wow, that's crazy.
Do you think, I know you're a center of the universe guy.
Yeah,
New York guy.
You calling me an asshole?
No. What am I, an asshole?
Hey, forget about it.
This podcast is going to be Italian.
I'm walking here. Get
the fuck out of here. Yeah. Do you think collectively that we really appreciate KD's game, just him in general, not Kevin Durant's game? Like,
who's we? New York?
Just fans in general.
Oh, I think that. I think
you think so.
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. That's
even
a
though
good
he's kind of petulant and everything, but like
KD's I think we do appreciate how good he is, especially fans.
Yeah.
I mean, general folk, probably not, because they don't know enough about the game. But if you're a fan, you got to know that this dude is top three. He's on his, when he's on his game, dude, he's got the long game. He's got the, you know, he can play in the paint. Like, he can got a little handle. Yo, he's all around. KD is special. KD is a really, really solid, strong, Hall of Fame bound ball player.
Yeah.
And people, you know, him moving on and stuff, it's like, I don't ever have any problem with what KD does, because he's community-based, number one. And number two, when his contract was up in Oklahoma and he could have gone into the free agent market, he signed early with Oklahoma City.
He did,
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
He said, I don't want to go into the market. This is my home. I want to give this a shot. I want to give it a chance. And he did that.
Gave money to those hurricane victims.
He gave money to the hurricane victims. So when it came time, that second go round for him to be a free agent, he says, yo, I gave it a shot. Now I got to go out into the world. You know what I mean? Take my talents to wherever. So I'll always respect him for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't begrudge him for him moving on from Oklahoma or anywhere else. You know what I mean?
Do you think sometimes we lose, like as fans, not us because we're smart, but do you think that we can sometimes forget that's show business too? And it doesn't really matter
forget,
what team a guy plays.
I forget
plays.
That all the time, to be honest.
Okay.
I don't even equate it. And so it bothers me on how showbiz it's become.
Yeah.
Because I'm a purist. Back in the day, it wasn't.
Believe that. Like, back you growing up in New York. Yeah.
Back in the day, it wasn't. Back in the day, it was sports.
Right.
And they were beloved. They were beloved athletes. Now they want to be entertainers. And it's just, and there's some entertaining on the court.
Right.
You know? But that whole showbiz vibe has changed. So I don't particularly care for it, but I get it. You know what I mean? Like, folks want to play in L.A. so they have access to Hollywood, which is bugged out to me.
The world just becomes so much smaller with the internet and everything.
Sure.
And, like, you could be a guy like Giannis and stay. I wonder if he's going to stay. He claims he's going to stay for this
whole
career.
But it's almost impossible
for,
you know, a small market team like Milwaukee to even be able to afford him. He would have to make concessions. He would have to say, I'm going to take this much. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He's going to have to work with them. If not, he's moving on. I mean, it's just inevitable. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But people, they have to be trained to not get so upset about it, I think.
To be trained?
I don't know.
I think I think at this point, it's just like, it's a given.
You know what did it for me? I'll say I was 11 years old, and this is like 1991. I see Joe Montana in
a
Chiefs.
You were 11 in 1991?
Yeah, I was born in 1980. I'm 39.
I was smoking crack in the Port Authority in 1991.
Really?
Nah.
Okay,
but I'm just saying.
I was like, no, that's not true.
Nah, I was smoking crack at other places.
Oh, really?
No.
Okay. All right,
I was at the Port Authority
in
1991.
You were?
Yeah.
I can believe that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can believe you got on a bus.
Yeah,
at
a couple
some
times.
Point.
A
yeah.
couple times. Shit, I was doing comedy in 91.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was doing stand-up in 91. All right, anyway.
Just seeing Joe Montana in a Chiefs uniform.
That was weird.
And I was like, and so at that time, the only person that I remember seeing stay with a franchise was Cal Ripken Jr.
Yeah.
And like, you could look at somebody, you could look
at Larry Bird.
You could look at Ricky Henderson's baseball card and be like, Oakland, New York, or somewhat whatever, Toronto. Like, you just.
The Mets.
Back
to Oakland.
Right.
Yeah, he was an animal.
So it's just like no real loyalty. Yeah. So that kind of.
That started in the 90s.
Yeah. It was kind of like, okay, well, if Michael Jordan can be in a Wizards uniform, then.
That was also odd, y'all. Yeah. It was like, dude, it's like he was. When in a Wizards uniform, it's like he was in drag. It's like, you didn't recognize him. Why Michael wearing a wig, man? Why Michael coming out to.
That's when I got to see him live. I mean, he had like a quiet 23. Just, it was insane.
So that was odd. It's like Montana playing for the Chiefs was weird. But yeah, the business just changed, man. Sports just changed in the 90s. It just blew up with TV contracts and sports contracts. And you know what? Fuck China, by the way. Why are we beholden to China? Are you kidding me?
Right.
Like, what? They need us. We don't need them.
Right.
So they're talking about they're going to stop Chinese. They're going to stop the NBA games on state TV. State TV, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
And just like that, just completely disregarding the millions and millions of fans that they have there that are going to they're going to be missing games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're going to be hating the fact they don't care.
Right.
It's a human rights violation, bro.
Yeah.
It's a human rights violation, and they just don't care. And so, I mean, why? So I'm glad Adam Silver came out and said, nah, we're not doing it like this. We're going to respect free speech.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to be beholden to anyone. If an owner feels a certain way, he's going to express himself.
Yeah.
You know, so I was happy that they, because in the beginning, the NBA bitched up. They were like, yo, oh, that's terrible. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
Adam Silver said, nah, we're not doing it like that. So good for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And good for the league.
Yeah, because at one point they were like, they're taking down posters.
Yeah.
So what?
So who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares? The game is global. The game is global. I was in Australia. I was performing in Australia. And one day we went to this sneaker store.
Mm-hmm.
It was dope. But the sneakerheads around the world.
How was it in there?
It was dope. It was funky as hell. And there was a lot of, you know, kids, you know, the sneakerheads around the world. But I walked out. Like, the entrance was in an alley, a funky-ass alley, too. It was, like, all graffitied up. It was dope.
Yeah.
And so I walk out. I had enough of, you know, I let Trevor and them stay in there, figure out what they want.
Mm-hmm.
So I came out because I wanted to look around and stuff. And I crossed the street, the little cobblestone road. And I'm looking at this store, and I turn around to see if I see them, because the entrance was big and it was open, to see if I see them. And right beside the entrance was a mural. The size of this wall here, maybe bigger, of Ben Simmons.
Of course,
Ben Simmons. And I was like, yo. And I was like, wow. And it was a beautiful mural. I'm going to show you the picture. I have it somewhere. It's a beautiful mural. I'm like, yo, these are some b-ball heads. You know what I mean? It was an amazing mural. And so I was asking about the mural. And they were like, yo, that's the man. And you know, they were just, so it's global. The game is global.
Right.
You know what I mean? The game is just amazing. So China, I'm sure, is billions of dollars. It's going to be a loss. But
yeah.
You know, we got to hold on to our...
Get it somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. Know, they can. And we got to hold on to our principles. We got to hold on to our, you know, to our integrity. Man. Like, why are we beholden to money? And that's what's wrong with this country. You know? Like, because the economy is good. I don't see it. But the economy is good, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Then all else is good with Trump. And it's like, that's not how this works, man.
Right.
You know, there's nuances to life. There's nuances to the world. There's humanity. You can't be rich and devoid of humanity. It's insanity to me.
Yeah.
You know? That's why Bill Gates is my man. You know?
Yeah.
You know, he gives to charity. A beautiful dude, by the way. Oh, I dropped something. I dropped a name.
Oh, you met him. I met
Bill. Yeah, in Seattle. We did a show in Seattle.
Okay.
I met Bill and Melinda, his wife, who's a sweetheart. And they were fantastic. You know, they're real down-to-earth good people, you know. You know,
do they give you like Microsoft Office password and stuff?
No, they
didn't. Like, yo, Bill, I'm trying to get that word hook up.
You want that? I'll text him.
Text him for me, man.
Hey, man, my man Chris, who?
Exactly.
Yeah, new phone, who this?
Yeah. I wanted to get back to like the time that I met you. So I bombed in Rutherford, New Jersey.
I don't remember that.
And I get off stage.
I vaguely remember you going up, but I don't.
Yeah.
I don't remember paying attention.
That's fine. That's totally fine.
Who I was done? With you a couple of weeks ago and I didn't pay attention.
I know. Just like my parents. That's why I do stand up. So there we go.
That's what's up.
And so I get off stage. You're like, man, you're a good writer. You're like,
oh, I said that?
Yeah, you said something like, wait, oh, you got some
the good night that you bombed?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so fast forward to maybe 2 or 3 years later,
uh-huh.
I'm opening for Orny Adams. Yeah. You were hosting.
I was hosting.
And I was like, somebody couldn't do it
that's
that
right.
night.
That's right. That's right.
And yeah. And I just did okay.
Right.
I was just like up there.
Yeah.
And I was like, they didn't really get me. And then you were like, you got some good stuff, man. You got some jokes. And it was encouraging, and you weren't being a dick.
Oh, good. Because I try not to be a dick.
I've never
younger comics and cats like that because it's not easy.
Yeah.
So if I saw something, I do remember the levity. I remember levity.
Yeah.
And I do remember thinking, yo, he's got some.
Okay.
I do remember that. I don't remember the first show you said.
Yeah.
But I do remember that, and I always make a point to tell that comic something about it.
You know
what I mean? I always make a point to let them know you have to keep doing it because there's something. And if down the road you'll hit a wall and that's it, that's fine. But at this point where you're at, what I'm seeing, you got to keep going.
Yeah.
I remember talking to you about that, man. I remember thinking he's got something.
That helped me too.
Yeah. I'm glad.
Yeah, because sometimes when you get the veterans say something like that, you're like, okay, well, I know
it's validating.
It didn't go.
It feels great.
It is. Yeah.
I remember. Yeah, it feels great when you know the heads you know that have been there before you validate you. I felt the same way, man. When I've been complimented by folks that I've watched and I've, you know, seen on TV or whatever, it's validating. And this profession just, we're so starved for whatever little crumb we can get.
Yeah.
So when we get a compliment from someone we respect, we hold it dear.
Yeah.
And it gives us, and it energizes us, it fuels us.
It does, man, because it was, and we kind of became really cool after that. Like, we were friends on Facebook, we always comment stuff. And you kind of have a similar career path to me because you're also an actor. And I just remember one time you posted something like a clip of like you doing a character and you were doing like a monologue and you were at like a, it's just you by yourself, you're like at a table or something.
I was the owner of a hardware store.
Yes,
that's one of the best, like, I don't really like watching myself, man. Like, you know, it's just, and I'm not an actor.
I know what you mean.
I'm a stand-up who happens every now and again to get acting work.
Yeah.
But I enjoy it. I enjoy acting, but I never know what I'm doing. Like, I'm always insecure about that. You know what I mean? Like, yo, it's great, and it doesn't feel right for some reason. I don't know. That's what we do in our heads. You know what I mean?
Sure.
We sabotage ourselves. But that was written by Danny Hock.
Okay.
Right. Danny, I know Danny for years. Danny to me is the best monologist. He's a monster. Danny's so talented, and he had a one man on HBO. Wow, what's the name of that one man show? He's had a bunch of one man shows that are fantastic.
Okay.
And so, are you familiar with Danny's work?
If I've seen him, I would know. Like, probably see you in one of those guys. You see
the
his
movie
face.
White Boys. He's like him and his two boys. They think they're hip hop heads. They think they're black. They live in Iowa.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, I've heard of it. So I'm surprised you didn't see that.
I probably did, bro. But I don't. I don't. There could be so many, and I'm not gonna try to lie. I've seen it. You've seen
everything, B. You have. You constantly post. I'm like, really? The Favorite?
The Favorite was great, though.
I know. I want to see it. I'm just fucking with you.
Okay, The Favorite was awesome.
But so Danny wrote it, and so I get a call. And he said, listen, Danny Hock wrote this monologue. Hal Hartley.
That name, yes, I know.
Hal Hartley, he directed it.
Okay.
Yeah, and so he directed it. He's the dude with that trilogy, Ned Rifle.
Yes, Parker Posey. Love her.
Yeah. So I get a call, said, Hal Hartley is directing, and they want you to do, and Danny wants you to do this monologue.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just flattered, because that's my guy, first of all, and I'm such an admirer of his work. And I was flying out to Puerto Rico when they wanted to shoot. So I came back from Puerto Rico. I cut my vacation short like by a day. I left my old lady out there in Puerto Rico with like a roll of quarters. Because at that point, we were down on our funds and shit. I said, yo, boo, here's some quarters, and I'll be in New York. So I came, and we taped it. And it was a series of monologues. what was it, Made in America, I think the name of the movie is.
Okay.
And it was a series of monologues. And some of the folks that had monologues in the film were like Bobby Cannavale.
Yeah.
Who I love. He had a monologue. So it was nice to be in that company.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm pretty proud of that.
I think I did
tell
you.
The name of the piece is Phil.
Because I remember saying, like, yeah, this is dope as hell.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But I don't think.
That's Danny. Yeah. That's Danny's work.
Yeah.
And Hal Hartley's direction. It was fantastic.
How did you get started? Because one of the things I appreciate about you is, like, you're a headliner, but you can also host.
Sure.
And, like, and when I saw you, because I don't think I'd seen you in.
Hey, how you doing?
Jimmy, we're in the middle of something here. You mind? You mind? We're in the middle of something.
Hey, how you doing, man? Good to see you.
We got Jimmy over here.
Hey, Jimmy.
What are you guys moving furniture? What are you guys doing?
We're doing a podcast, you animal. Don't be a savage. Go eat your sandwich.
Right.
I'm gonna come hug you later.
What I appreciate is because hosting's hard. It's not. It's like. It's I don't know. It's hard.
Yeah.
And you make it look seamless. And
when that's his experience, right?
And
that's
How many?
That's just years of doing it.
Oh, just years.
You know what I mean? Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Because when I saw, because I hadn't seen you in a long time. I would always see you in the here, mm-hmm. and stuff, but like I hadn't seen you work. And when we were working together like a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. I was just like, "Fuck, it just looks seamless."
Thank you, Papa.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
How did you get the what do you? I don't know. Maybe like talk about like the differences between just like doing a regular spot as opposed to hosting.
Sure. I mean, it's hosting. You're the linchpin, right? Hosting,
yeah.
You set it off.
Mm-hmm.
The show goes how the host goes.
Yeah.
And what's most important about the host is to ingratiate him or herself to the audience. Hosts that go up and just plow through their material is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because it's like, whoa, let's just, you know what I mean? This is a Me Too moment, B. Like, you know, take me to dinner first, B. Like, you know, they just start plowing. It's just like, dude, stop filling me up. Like, you know, court me a little bit.
Right.
So, I enjoy going into the audience. And not everybody can or not everybody wants to, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But I really enjoy creating a tapestry in which I go into the audience and then I'll get to know about some folks and something to trigger a bit. So I'll go into the bit,
yeah.
And then I move on. And then I'll go to the other side of the room and something will trigger something that will relate to the first person I spoke
yeah.
to. So I bridge that. Do you know what I mean? So I try
yeah.
to paint that picture and create that tapestry, and it's different every show, which
so,
is beautiful.
So when you go up, you don't have a set list.
No.
You
when
just,
I host, no.
Yeah, you
I,
just
no.
know, like...
Right. So that's another difference, right?
Yeah.
When you have a... You know, I never really have a set list, but I do have ideas as to where I want
right.
to go. So
right.
when I'm doing a regular spot, I'm like, I want to do this. I want to hear how this sounds. So I do have in my head a little outline.
Yeah.
But when I host, I have no idea what I'm talking
How
about.
How different is it when you work with Trevor Noah? Is it a two-hander usually?
Yeah, it's me and him.
How different is it then when you're doing like?
I tell you what. You know what's interesting about Trevor? What doing like working with Trev? And you know when you're headlining with Burrow, you're headlining these folks. Like we're doing theaters now. We're doing arenas.
Yeah.
Like, you know this dude is.
You're
killing.
Doing MSG in November.
November 8th.
November
we're gonna 8th. Be at MSG.
Yeah.
So. The key thing to remember is that they're here. They go to the show to see him.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're fans, like hardcore fans.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So it's almost like shooting fish in a barrel.
Right.
Like you, as long as you understand they're there to see him, and just stay in that lane.
Yeah.
They're gonna fuck with you. You
right.
know what I'm saying? If you're gonna start berating people and just not being ingratiating, they're not gonna fuck with you. You know, but with Trevor, his fans are so accommodating, and they're so patient, and
yeah.
they'll listen intently, and then you hit the punch, and they just roar. It's just like, it's a joy working for those, with Trevor and
yeah.
performing in front of his fans, because they come to see him, so they come to have a good time.
Yeah.
As opposed to being in a club, dude, it's volatile as hell at times. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just a bunch of different folks from different walks and. They don't know who's coming up, and you know it can be different. But that's shows like that is what makes us better. You know
that's
I mean?
True too.
You know
yeah.
that adversity or just that challenge. That,
right.
It's not always adverse. Most times it's not. But that challenge of trying to figure out an audience that you may not have anything in common with. You know what I mean? When I'm with Trevor,
yeah.
When I'm with Trevor, we have Trevor in common. me and the audience, we have Trevor in common. When you're working and it's a showcase and it's just a different bunch of different comics, the audience doesn't know who they're going to come see. So you got to figure that out.
Did you feature a lot when you were coming up?
Yeah, sure.
Like, I feel like I'm at the point in my career, I'm just only 10 years in.
Okay.
And I feel like all the writing and all the stuff I've been doing, it's like now I feel like I'm at a point where I can like showcase what I can do, mm-hmm. or like I'm kind of able to be put on as like, oh, because I remember about a month or two ago, like they had a fallout at Bananas.
Okay. In Poughkeepsie?
Hasbrook Heights.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, okay, I'll do it. And then it was just like knocked it, like featured, yeah. like just
yeah,
was like yeah, strong with
cause,
it.
Right, because you're ready.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. That's the whole thing. Also, with young comics, I impart what I know.
Yeah.
Through conversation, mm-hmm. right? Like if you ask me for advice, I'm like, I don't. You know what
yeah,
I mean? Like,
yeah.
There's no exact science to this.
Right.
So I don't know. I can tell you what's happened to me, and it's very unorthodox on how I've achieved what I've achieved. You know what I mean? And then you can talk to someone else, and it's you know, a lot more mainstream. You know what I mean? And so it's not an exact science. I lost my train of thought. What are we talking about?
Just about like featuring and like just trying to like coming into your own
So I you know, the one thing I always tell cats, you just be ready,
yeah,
right, because they had a fallout, they call you, you go in, you smash,
yeah,
now they see you, and now you're gonna go back in, you know what I mean, they're not gonna let you just go,
right,
you know, they're gonna, you know, they're gonna call you, now you're on their radar,
yeah, and that's been like
that's important.
That was like the second or third time that they've done that.
That's important, being, you know, being on radars and just and This is luck, man.
Yeah.
Like, I met Trevor here.
Yeah.
And Trevor saw me perform, and he said, "Yo, you want to travel with me?" I said, "Yeah." And we just hit it off. And then he got the show, and then I was warming up for the Daily Show. Yeah. It happened like that. There was no industry involved.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was just happenstance, and we just hit it off. Like,
can
two
you
dudes.
Speak? Because I feel like, I guess now that I'm almost, I'll be 40 next year.
Okay.
And I find.
When's your birthday?
February 21st.
Okay. February 10th, my son.
Oh, okay. Aquarius. Okay.
Pisces.
Cool.
Aquarius?
I'm a Pisces.
Yeah.
I think it's, I don't know what the cutoff is. I just know I'm a Pisces.
I don't care.
My one of my closest friends is like the 16th, and he's an Aquarius.
Okay.
So I would just assume he's Aquarius. Your
I'm
son's
a Virgo
Aquarius.
If anyone cares.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I guess because it seems like a lot of the good stuff that's happened to me, at least in stand-up, has been through like a, it hasn't really been quote unquote industry,
right.
And I'm making air quotes for the listeners,
yeah,
but it's just sort of like it has been like that natural thing of like,
sure.
Oh, hey, come work
right.
with me. And when I've chased it, it's never happened.
Like, right.
I used to chase Montreal.
It's frustrating because you do everything you have to do, right? You're sending out postcards, you're getting headshots, you're doing everything that the industry requires, and you're not achieving,
right?
And then some dude sees you. And in a spot in Brooklyn, it's like, yo, you want to come open for me?
Yeah.
Or, yo, come to the showcase and then you kill it. You know what I mean? Now you're in Montreal because this dude saw you in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And a lot of it works that way. So that's not the advice you impart, right?
Right.
Like, yo, what should I do? Yo, one day you go to Brooklyn. You do a spot.
Yeah.
Someone is bound to see you. You know what I mean? It just, that's not the advice to give because it doesn't always work that way. You know what I mean? But a lot of times... it does, you know, and when it does, it's dope. And this, you know, Sean, my man, you know, Sean who books the room, he was general manager here.
Yeah.
He's the one who's, you know, introduced me to Trevor and it changed my life. You know what I mean?
I would say, like, Steve Mazzilli did it for me because I think I might have met you. Well, we met already, but, like, we'd met before, but I opened for Chris Hardwick at Levity, and then I met Steve there. And then the next day, like, I had a ticket to go see Burr and Verzi, actually, in Inglewood.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, I'm going to see Burr and blah, blah, blah. And I was driving home the next day. And then Steve hit me up and emailed me. He's like, hey, can you fill in?
Oh, dope.
And I've been working there like, ever since, on and off.
Yeah.
And
that's how it works.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And that's how I, like, learned how to become a comic, like a real comic.
Yeah.
That's
how that works.
Yeah. And is there a different skill set, like, when you're doing warm-up as opposed to...
Absolutely.
Yeah. Then, like,
absolutely.
Hosting the show here?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
I tried... What I tried to do is...
Well, what they first tell you is that this is Show World.
Yeah.
It's not, it's Sea World, actually. Mm-hmm. Show World is a strip club. this is not Show World. Damn, it isn't? Because I got all these singles. This is Sea World.
Yeah.
It's not Caroline's. You know, so they told me, you're a stand-up, and we know you're a stand-up, but this is a whole different animal.
Okay.
In which you have to hype the crowd up, and you got to get them going and get them ready for the show.
Yeah.
And so that's not really my thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? As far as I enjoy hosting and hyping, but I want to be able to do my jokes.
Right,
and I want
to
be able to play. And what's interesting about that, man, is that Mike Yard, man, my man Mike Yard, he got a job. He was a correspondent on The Nightly Show with Larry Wilmore.
Yep.
And so my lady and I, we go to a taping, you know, to support. And the Kevin Bartini was the warm-up.
Yeah.
He was the warm-up for The Nightly Show. And so he's warming up. And sometimes you got to stretch because they're not ready. And so he's warming up. He keeps looking to the side. And he's just doing his thing. So I look at my wife, and I'm like, I said, Mama, I don't ever want to do this. I don't ever want to be a warm-up. She said, really? Because I think you'd be really good. I'm like, I don't ever want to do this. Fast forward to 6 months, did you ever get the show? She said, yeah, you want to get a warm-up? I said, fuck yeah, man. Let's make this happen, Daddy. Let's make it happen. And so what's interesting is, like, I'm doing it, right? And I'm having a hard time, but I'm doing well.
Yeah.
Right? I'm doing well, but I'm not feeling, I don't have my legs under me. I'm constantly on my heels with it.
Why was that, do you think?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Just maybe
a feeling.
Insecurity.
Yeah,
you know what
okay.
I mean? Insecurity and not, and again, being overly critical of what we do. But there were times when I started, there were times the dudes would come out of the control room to stand on the side to watch me. And I was like, yo, there's something here. Like,
there's
something here, but I couldn't quite pinpoint it. You know what I mean? So then I get a call to warm up John Oliver on HBO.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Beck, I love John Oliver and I love the show. So it was an honor. And somewhere in the middle of warming that audience up, they were just really tight, and I wasn't having as much fun with them as I have at The Daily Show. And it was somewhere in the middle of that warm-up with John Oliver that it dawned on me, dude, like, you got The Daily Show. Like, stop playing. You're doing really well at The Daily Show. You
know?
And it was then that it clicked, like, oh, wow. And then from then on, I really had a blast. Like, I had a great time. Like, I would just...
You have to get out of your own way.
Yeah, get out of your own way. That's a perfect way to do it.
To say it.
And every day, again, the tapestry and the... just it was a different show every day, and I had so much fun on that show. It was a blast.
That's cool, because I think that's kind of what I'm trying to do. Mm-hmm. I think it's a constant struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the older I get, the less I worry about it. Like, you want to do a good job, but I don't think I stress out as much.
Mm-hmm.
There's something I got to talk to you about off mic. But, I think...
Who?
Yeah. Huh?
Who you talk to?
No, I got to talk to you about something off mic.
Oh, okay.
Because I had this experience yesterday when I was at, I had this audition that was just like a co-star part, or they don't know what they're going to do with the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like an acting gig or whatever. And it was in this really huge, nice building from a studio. And I was thinking about it. I was like, I have to learn my lines and do what I'm supposed to do. And then I was thinking, oh, yeah, I've gotten a check from this company before.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I was just like, let me fall back and not worry about it.
Stop playing.
Yeah.
And you do your thing.
Yeah.
Do your job, do your work, and you're good. Just, again, just be ready and just give it all. Give it your all. Don't have, because the worship, man, and we've done it. I know you've done it. I've done it.
Yeah.
You go to an audition, and you leave that audition knowing that you have stepped it, like you didn't give it your fucking all, or you should have made this choice that you didn't make because you were scared or whatever. Man, that shouldn't even exist in our realm.
Yeah.
You have an audition, you go in full bore.
Right.
Full bore, balls to the wall. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you got to pull it back, they'll tell you to pull it back. If not, they love it, you got it.
Right.
You know what I mean? You have nothing to lose at all.
I kind of want you to, I don't want you to burn it, but I kind of want you to tell that the nevertheless thing.
The Nevertheless story?
Could you do it?
Hell yeah, man.
Oh, fuck. Yes.
Are you crazy?
Okay.
That's my favorite story ever.
Okay, so we can do it? All right, perfect.
And after that, is that we're going to close
off? Let's close with this. Let's close with this.
Okay. It's my favorite story ever. I have nothing to do with the story. I'm not in it. I just read it, and I think it's a brilliant story. Paul Thomas Anderson, the director of Boogie Nights.
Yep.
Which, by the way, HBO's been running Boogie Nights this month or last month.
Okay.
Boogie Nights is a spectacular piece of work.
He's one of my favorites.
He's a monster.
Yeah.
Magnolia is one of my favorite movies.
Yes.
you know. Sorry, so he's directing Boogie Nights. And there's a scene in Boogie Nights in which Burt Reynolds, his character, is screaming at Mark Wahlberg's character. And he's railing. And he's going in on Mark Wahlberg. And he's yelling. The veins are popping. And he's just yelling. And in the monologue, as he's screaming at Wahlberg, he says, "Nevertheless," and this other actor, Ricky Jay, he starts laughing. He breaks. He starts laughing. So Paul Thomas Anderson's like, "Cut." I said, "Ricky, what's up? You good?" He's like, I'm sorry, man. We're good. All right, let's do it again. Rolling. Action. Scene starts again. Burt Reynolds is going in at Mark Wahlberg again, just going in. He says, "Nevertheless," Ricky Jay breaks again. Paul Thomas Anderson is like, "Dude, what's up? Time is money. What's going on here?" He's like, "I'm sorry. It's just that whenever Burt says nevertheless, it reminds me of a story." And some years ago, I was at a minor league hockey game, and the arena was empty. Maybe 200 people, drunken people in the whole arena. You can hear drunken, echoed conversations across the rink. And the game's about to start. And the PA announces this, "Ladies and gentlemen, if you can all please rise," and Susan Collins sings the national anthem. And this drunk dude from across the arena, he screams, "Susan Collins sucks cock!" And the PA announcer paused and he said, "Nevertheless." I love that story. That's my favorite story ever, man. Nevertheless, she gonna sing, man. Take your hat off, stand up. She gonna sing. Nevertheless, she gonna sing. I love that song.
Angelo Lozada, thank you so much, Chris, for doing this, man. Appreciate you.
My man.
All right.
It was a pleasure.
Take it easy, everybody.